ラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
This episode is all about those moments where sewing doesn't make you love yourself. It might be because of endless fitting issues, seemingly impossible techniques, or a machine that is out to get you. The truth is, sewing isn't always warm and fuzzy. The sewing struggle is real, and we want to share your stories because you are not alone.
We got you.
We got you.
Hi, Helen.
Hi, Caroline.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm kind of like loopy this week because so much is going on and we're recording like
seemingly
1,000 times in the next couple weeks. So yeah, it's gonna be great. Everything is great. Everything is awesome. We're playing a little bit of pre-catch-up. We're doing a little bit of batching.
Yeah,
which is good.
Yes,
it's a lot though.
It is good. It is really good. You're going away and then I'm going to be not going away, but that also means that I get to get a lot of work done while you're gone.
It's like a vacation for you when I'm on vacation.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's interesting because coming here and recording the podcast does take a lot of time out of my day, especially when we do it multiple times a week. It feels like, you know,
you're never in the office.
Exactly. Yeah. It feels like I'm never at the office. So when you are away, I get to be in the office a lot, which is fun. So, but I love you and I'll miss you.
Trying not to take it personally.
I'm sure you feel the same way when I'm away.
Yeah.
Me not coming over and being like, hey guys, make me coffee.
In general, I find that the days when we record, like I have to block off more time than you would expect because there's the preamble and then the postamble. And then even after that, I just like feel drained, not in a negative way, but it takes a lot of my energy to record the podcast. I've noticed. So I've stopped trying to schedule things right after you leave because I know that I won't have the energy to do them.
It's so true. I was just talking to Shay about this last night because I was like, we're recording so much these days and I feel like if we record in the morning and then I try to go to the office in the afternoon, it's so hard to get anything done and really like focus because it feels like your time is limited. I'm tired, you know, and vice versa. If we record in the afternoon, in the morning, it's like I'm just waiting to go to our meeting. So it's something I'm trying to work through because I can't just lose half days willy-nilly all the time.
Whole days.
So I have to figure out a way to balance both of those things.
And re-energize. I don't know.
Yeah. I think like, yeah, giving myself a moment to breathe and re-energize would be a good plan. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll try that later.
Well, hey, you have a car now.
Oh my gosh, I bought a car this weekend.
So exciting. You're so adult.
Yeah, I know. I do feel very adult. Shay and I decided we were going to buy a car this weekend and we did. So it went really well.
Good. I'm so proud of you.
A new to me car, not a new car, but it's been great. I drove it here this morning. It's been awesome. Makes taking little Pepper around a lot easier.
Yeah, for sure. And it's going to make getting here and going to the office so much easier too. It's just going to be
a game changer. It simplifies things for sure. Mm-hmm. It is awesome. Yes. What else is going on?
Well, we are pretty excited because we're going to be returning to Camp Workroom Social in a couple of weeks. Oh my gosh. I can't believe it's already been a year since we went.
It's creeping up.
I know. We're so, so excited. We booked all of our flights and hotels and everything.
We're going to be in Brooklyn again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know.
It's going to be really fun.
Yeah.
Ooh. Do you know what we're doing in October?
What?
We're sewing coats.
Oh, yeah. We decided to get together with a friend of ours and do some regular sewing meetups all throughout October. Just little small ones so that we can make coats together. And we're going to break it down into the steps. So we're going to have a muslining night and we're going to have like a fabric cutting night. And just every step is going to be broken up. And hopefully by the end of October, we'll have a coat.
I think that is such a good plan because I've been wanting to make a coat for years and I just never seem to have the energy to dedicate to making a coat. It feels like such a huge undertaking. I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate. It's like, oh God, making a coat, how many hours is that going to take me? Do I even have the time? Do I have the energy? But breaking it up into small chunks and doing it with friends is going to make it so much better, so much easier and smoother. And having your support, I mean, I'm super, super pumped to finally have a coat that I made.
Me too. I need to pick a pattern. I still haven't settled on one.
Yeah, me neither. I'm kind of waffling, but once we decide, we'll let you guys know.
Yes, we will.
What else have you got going on?
Well, hopefully in a week, I will have a new pattern coming out.
Yay!
I'm so excited about this one. I'm not going to give too many details because I like the element of surprise. But yeah, this one's been a while in the making, so I'm really pumped to have another pattern in my collection.
That is so great. I'm very excited about this pattern. Can't wait for our listeners to see it.
Me too. What about you?
It's honestly just same old lately. Just keeping busy, getting those fabrics out. It's been really fun in the office. So yeah, that's it.
That's good.
Nothing crazy to report for once.
All right. We have some feedback and a little challenge that we want to tell you guys about. It's called the Hinterland Sew Off, and it's hosted by the Sarah Project and Tori from the Doing Things blog. And they have this to say about their challenge. We are so excited to involve the whole sewing community in our month-long sewing challenge. Join us and sew your very own Hinterland dress, patterned by Sew Liberated. There will be prizes, pattern giveaways, and discounts from some of our favorite indie shops, including our shops, Blackbird Ooh. Fabrics and Helen's Closet. Don't forget to post your dress by October 24th using our hashtag Hinterland Sew Off. Head over to the Sarah Project and the Doing Things blog on Instagram for all of the details. And they can't wait to see all of your makes. So we are very excited about this little challenge, the Hinterland Sew Off.
Yeah. What are you contributing to the challenge?
I am giving away 3 free patterns.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm providing their fabric for their dresses.
Ooh, that's awesome.
Yes, it's so exciting. I can't wait to see what they make.
It's a fun little collaboration. I love those ladies.
Yes, me too. All right, so we have another piece of feedback. Court wrote in to tell us about a use for the twin needle on woven fabrics. We were struggling to think of one in our anniversary episode, but she pointed out that you can use them for jeans top stitching, 2 perfect parallel lines of stitching. That makes so much sense. Why did we not think of that?
I mean, I don't know. Thank goodness Court was there to rescue us.
Yes, yes. I'm actually really curious about, you know, whether this works really well. Like, I want to try it out on my next pair of jeans because that would make top stitching so much easier.
It'll be good. I wonder about threading 2
top stitch threads
through my machine, but I think depending on the machine, it could probably work fine. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, and you might have to play around with the tension. And anyways, mm-hmm. if I do it, I'll report back.
It sounds like a great application for it, though.
It really does.
Okay, and we have a question from a listener. I could really use a pep talk from you and Caroline about interfacing. I get freaked out and impatient with the fusible and I give up and I don't use it. Would you mind talking about it? I could use your encouragement and reassurance. And that question is from Bridget.
Bridget, I completely understand where you're coming from. Interfacing is probably my least favorite step in the like preparation stage of sewing when you're just getting all your pattern pieces ready to sew. But it's important. And it's one of those things that you just kind of have to embrace. Mm-hmm. And we definitely have some tips for you. So my first tip for you would be to use a press cloth. You know how interfacing can sometimes kind of gunk up your iron and you might worry about it getting too hot and leaving a residue, melting, that kind of thing. So using a press cloth allows you to protect your iron, protect your project, and it also is going to allow you to use higher heat. It's protecting your fabric so that you can use higher heat so that the fusible really does fuse on. So, I mean, obviously if you're working with polyester, don't go all the way up to the highest heat setting. You want to still keep in mind the fiber that you're using in the fabric, but it allows you to kind of like crank up the heat a little bit so that you can really get that fusible on there and have it stick. Because there's nothing worse than fusing your fabric and then coming back to sew it and having the fusible just kind of like
fall off.
Isn't that the worst?
It's happened to me before too. And I think it's a couple of things. It is whether or not the glue's actually properly melted and fused it. And also the fact that they're are a lot of different interfacings out there, and some of them are better quality than others. So one interfacing that we would recommend is called Sewer's Dream. I mean, the name speaks for itself.
It is a dream.
It's a dream to use. So if you're looking for a quality interfacing, you could try that one out. That will probably make a difference. You can get some really cheap stuff at the fabric store that's not necessarily very good.
Yeah. Sewer's Dream, I sell it in my shop. It is a lightweight interfacing, so you can use it with like a rayon challis or a viscose poplin or like a lighter weight linen. Or, I mean, it works for a lot of things, but it definitely gives a lighter fuse. Generally, as a rule, I like to move towards interfacings that feel more like fabric versus paper. So if you're looking at an interfacing that's kind of crinkly and like a non-woven material that almost looks like paper. Those are the cheaper ones, I would say. The ones that have like a soft hand feel and almost look woven, and I mean, they are woven, they feel more like fabric. Those are going to be the higher quality ones. Mm-hmm. And just experiment. And when you find an interfacing that you like, stock up, because it's always something that you're going to use. It's good to have around.
Yeah.
And our last tip was block fusing. This is something that you can do if you have a little bit of extra fabric and you've got a few pieces that you're going to be cutting out of fusible interfacing or that need to be fused. You can actually block fuse a chunk of fabric. So figure out how much fabric you need, get a piece of interfacing that fits that piece, fuse it all in one, and then cut your pattern pieces. And that way you're not fiddling with the interfacing kind of lining up perfectly on your pattern piece and then sticking off the edge, and you have to trim it. And mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I mean, we've all been there, right?
Yeah. I think it helps too with that peeling off in the corners. If you block fuse and then cut, your pattern piece has been cut out right in the middle of that fused area, and it's just that much more solid and secure.
And generally I find with interfacing, when you are pressing, you want to press up and down, not side to side. So you're not dragging the fusible across the fabric, and hold it down for longer than you think you need to. Actually press it, because you're melting that glue, and that glue needs to fuse, literally fuse to the fabric. I think sometimes we forget what we're actually doing with the fusible, right? So you have to press down. I remember in school, our teachers made us count to like 30 or something with the iron. Like, we would actually have to count. They'd be like, okay, count to 30, because we would never do it for long enough, you know?
Yeah.
Gosh, we have a lot to say about interfacing.
I know. Maybe we need a whole episode about it.
Maybe we do.
There's lots of different kinds, different applications.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let us know if you want more info on interfacing.
All right, we're ready to get onto the show.
I know. I'm really excited about this episode, and I have to thank you for suggesting it, because this one was your idea, and I was not sure kind of how it was going to go. But once we started getting the feedback and the stories, I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah, it's sort of spawned from an email that we received a couple months back, where one of our listeners was just saying, what happens when sewing doesn't make you love yourself? And, you know, how do I deal with that? And that really, I don't know, it stuck in my mind, and I've been thinking about it a lot lately. And I think it's an important thing to talk about on the show, because we like to be positive and excited about sewing, but sewing isn't always a positive experience. And I think it's important to acknowledge that and talk about it so that our listeners can relate.
Yeah, we don't want people out there wondering what they're doing wrong, why they're not always feeling, you know, warm and fuzzy about sewing, and whether it's something that's wrong with them. It's absolutely not. We've all had these various problems, and we're so excited to share these stories.
Yeah. So friends, you have proven that the struggle is real, because we asked you for your sewing struggle stories and you delivered. We got over 100 responses, and reading them really made us realize just how much sewing can impact our emotional state of being, our confidence, and our creative energy. I think sometimes sewing leaves us feeling so freaking good, right? But there is another side to that coin, and that is what we are going to be exploring today.
Yeah, so we want to read your stories and we want to chat about them to help others struggling with the same issues kind of feel less alone. And we've broken this episode up into some recurring themes that we noticed when we were reading the stories. So our hope is really to celebrate the darker side of sewing, shed some light on it, and just recognize that we're all in this together and that we can all relate to these experiences.
Definitely.
Okay, so our first kind of theme is sewing makes me feel lonely.
Yeah, we got that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So this comment is from Beatrice. I moved to Ohio 2 years ago from California for graduate school, so I didn't have any family or friends here. I started sewing about a year ago after I got interested in sewing my own home decor. I didn't have a deep connection to anyone in my program, so I had a lot of free time to sew. My boyfriend made some friends here, and he would go out a lot, sometimes overnight while I'd be at home sewing and listening to the podcast, watching TV, or doing homework. I felt so lonely because I never met anyone around my age, 24, who was into sewing, and the one girl I did meet through one of the many sewing classes I took didn't seem interested in sewing together. Most of the people I've seen in classes are older and doing their own thing. In a weird way, sometimes when I sew, I feel so lonely and friendless. I hope that I'll meet some new friends soon, as I'll be moving back to LA.
Aw, Beatrice, we hope you make some new friends too. And you're not alone in this. Sewing can be really isolating, because it is one of those hobbies that you tend to do by yourself. And I like to think of it as the opportunity to kind of celebrate and embrace this hobby that you get to spend just by yourself, just doing things by yourself, clearing your head, having that alone time. I mean, I really enjoy it. And so that's kind of how I like to frame it. I get to just hang out with myself. Is that weird?
I don't think that's weird. And yeah, like you said, online friends are real friends too. I find like when I'm feeling a little bit lonely in a project, if I share about it on Instagram stories, I'll get all these replies and people that are kind of relating or supporting or excited about what I'm working on. And it's just like a little boost of energy that helps me get through that lonely stage.
Yeah, me too. Okay, our next story is from Bronwyn. Size charts make me feel bad periodically in my sewing. I've never cared much about my ready-to-wear size because I just knew I didn't fit, so I didn't need to check. But being outside pattern size charts makes me feel horrible. There's no getting around the fact that I have a smallish bust and massive hips if I have to look at the numbers every time. Am I really so unfashionably fat that no one else is my size? It can be lonely, even though grading can be empowering.
This is so tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can relate to this. I know a lot of our listeners can relate to this when you're outside of the size chart or your body isn't that size that designers design for. It can feel really isolating. So we want to say that you're not alone and your body is certainly not unfashionable. It's a real shame that ready-to-wear fashion is so exclusive and sewing patterns can be just as frustrating with smaller size ranges. So we hope to keep seeing that change, and some companies you can check out our Cashmerette, yes, Tuesday Stitches, Seamwork, Jolly, and Megan Nielsen.
Yeah, we have noticed more and more companies expanding their size range, going into larger size ranges, starting a larger size range. All of these things do seem to be happening, albeit a little bit slowly, but we hope that that will continue and kind of snowball, you know?
Yeah, we really do. So the next theme that we kind of noticed is that it's hard to get back into sewing. So Emma commented, "Sewing has definitely made me doubt myself. When I was in high school, I really got into sewing. At that point, I was sewing constantly. I could draft my own basic patterns and was making items I was so proud to wear. After high school, I traveled and didn't make the time to sew. A few years later, I wanted to get back into it. It was so devastating because I was so rusty. Where had all my skills and abilities gone? I could no longer alter garments to suit my body, draft my own patterns, and even basic sewing skills felt really unnatural. I made a bunch of items that I was so unhappy with, and it was an on-off battle for the last few years as I never really made anything that I loved. Recently, I started going to a Sew Your Own project class where I live. The lady running it just helps us wherever we are at, and we work on our own projects, whatever it may be. It has really rekindled my passion for sewing, and slowly but surely, I'm remembering things I thought I had forgotten. Don't get me wrong, I feel like I'm really going back to basics, which was confronting at first. The most important thing for me now is rekindling my passion and just meeting myself where I'm at. I realized I don't need to rush. Who for? It's best to take it slow and really love what I'm doing. I've definitely had days where I wondered if I would ever get back into sewing again, and I cried too many times to count when I was frustrated with not getting something right or the final product not turning out how I envisioned. I've realized it's all part of the process and worth it when you're actually getting something right or finishing something you're so proud of."
It's such a great story.
It is.
Really well written too.
Yes. And I really love this story about going to a Sew Your Own project class. We've heard about these types of classes before, and I think it's a really nice way to sew with other people and get that support from a teacher. So I think it's a great story.
Mm-hmm. I like what she said about meeting herself where she's at, you know, just letting yourself be at a certain stage in your learning process and not expecting more necessarily, you know, just being there.
Yeah, I think relearning things can be so humbling, but things will click again eventually. If anybody else out there is having some struggles with relearning a craft, be it sewing or something else, I think, you know, it'll come back to you eventually. So just give yourself some grace.
Mm-hmm. Okay, our next category is "My weight is fluctuating."
All right, here's a story from The Modern Seamstress. "For the past 7 years, my size in all my patterns has been consistent until this fall. I just started a new job and life has generally been more stressful and it's starting to show in my body. As a result, I'm unable to wear some me-mades. Despite being a champion for body positivity and personally experiencing the benefits of sewing on my confidence, I feel like a beginner facing her measurements. I'm working through it, but it's been an interesting set of emotions."
Oh, I can totally relate to this one. In the last year since becoming full-time with my business, I've gained some weight And it's forced me to stop wearing some of my favorite handmade clothes, even get rid of some of my favorite handmade clothes. And that's been really difficult to confront and difficult to move into the next size range. But I recently kind of purged my closet and got rid of those things or put away those items that weren't fitting. And I finally properly remeasured myself, and I'm making new things in the size that I am now. And it feels so good. So I really just had to face into that kind of uncomfortable feeling and push through it. Not that I'm all the way through it, but I can completely relate to this story.
Yeah, a lot of us have those stressful times in our lives that cause our weight to fluctuate, and it can be so, so disheartening and discouraging. And, you know, it's tough to get through, but I think that facing those numbers is the first step to having garments that fit, and then you're going to be happier in the end.
It's true. So Sam said, it seems like so many people in the sewing community are left feeling more body positive after sewing, which is great, but it's having the opposite effect on me right now. I've put on a fair bit of weight in the last year, and lately when I go to sew and take my measurements, I get too upset by what they are. I haven't made anything for myself since May and refuse to wear the last thing I made as it's clingy. Maybe I should just sew a bag or something.
Oh,
I mean, you could sew a bag. Bags are fun.
Yeah. Leah replied to this comment and said, I've been in the exact same place, having gained a lot of weight over the past 2 years. Facing that string of measurements is so hard, but I keep reminding myself that no matter my size, I'm still worthy of beautiful clothing.
So well said, Leah.
Can I just say, I love it when we have these conversations in the comments and our listeners jump in to support each other. It's like one of my favorite things. You guys are so awesome.
I know. It was really fun reading through and seeing all the replies.
Yeah. Allie Olson made a really great point in her episode that fit is everything when it comes to clothing that makes you feel good. That said, it can be hard to confront weight change through measurements and size charts. So we love more forgiving garments right now. We are definitely into that. So knit tees and elastic waisted culottes for the win.
Yes, absolutely. And that relates to our next question as well. A question from Laura. Any sewing suggestions for folks who are losing weight? I've been losing pounds over the past several months and have put most of my garment sewing on hiatus because I don't want to make something I can't wear in 6 months. Any suggestions on patterns or construction methods that will be easy to alter so I can keep making clothes? I mean, again, the knits and the elastic waisted pants and skirts, I think, are a great option for anyone whose weight is fluctuating up or down, because it does give you that wiggle room so that you can continue to wear those clothes.
Yeah. And those flowier dresses, looser fitting shirts, shirt dresses, that kind of thing, that works really well. You can also belt those things to kind of give your waist a little bit of definition, and that can look really nice when there's like a little bit of a blousy effect on those garments. I would generally steer clear of complex garments like pants or jeans, fully lined dresses, things with darts and princess seams that take a lot of fitting, because if you think your body's going to be changing, then, you know, that's a lot of work to put in. I do want to say something about this though. I feel like a lot of us can get into that pattern where we're always thinking about where we're going to be in 6 months, and it almost stunts our growth as sewists and stunts our productivity, because we're constantly worrying about making something that's not going to be wearable. And I feel like we should try to stop doing that. You know, like, I get it if you're losing weight and you do want to think about those things, but don't let it stop you from sewing, because sewing is about more than just that finished garment that you're going to be wearing. I think it's about the process. And if you can get a few months of good wear out of a garment, I think that's a win. I mean, it's going to give you something to wear while you're in that transitional period. So you still have to wear clothes when you're transitioning, or when you're at a weight that you're not happy with, that you know, you're looking towards the future and you want to change that. That's fine, but honor your body where it is now and give yourself clothes to wear right now, you know?
Yeah, clothes that are going to make you feel confident and amazing.
Exactly. All right, our next theme is that having kids changes everything. So here's what Becky said. I became a first-time mom a little over 3 years ago. It had been a rough pregnancy, with me being sick for the entire 9 months, and I was looking forward so much to being able to sit down and sew again without feeling awful the entire time. But all of a sudden, nothing I made was working out. I wasn't just learning to fit my now unfamiliar body, though that was an issue. It was things like my machine deciding it hated hemming certain knits and skipping stitches all over the place, or patterns I'd used before my pregnancy where the old finished garments still fit, didn't fit at all when I'd sewn them a second time, or the color of the fabric or style of the pattern ended up all wrong for me. The only pattern I had that really worked for me anymore was a super basic elastic waist skirt, which was a blow to my pride since I'd been sewing consistently since elementary school. And so it was about a full year before I had a project that I was truly happy with the results. In the midst of chronic sleep deprivation and the all-consuming tasks of trying to figure out how to take care of a tiny, helpless human, it was so hard to have one of the only things that was still just for me consistently turn out wrong. And it made me seriously question why I was still fighting to keep sewing as a part of my life. Fitting and finding time to sew are still tough after a second child came along, and my sewing room is now just half of a closet. I basically had to figure out my style all over again to fit this change in my life. But I'm finally having more hits than misses again, and I'm so glad I didn't just pack my machine away until the kids are older.
Oh, we are so glad too.
Yeah, it's such a relief that there's a positive spin at the end of the story because, I mean, that struggle, that sounds like a big struggle, mm-hmm. and I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we don't have kids, so it's hard for us to talk on what it feels like to have kids. I don't think that until you have them, you can truly appreciate all the sacrifices that you have to make and the change and the impact that it has on your entire life, everything, right? From your career right down to your hobbies and your sewing. So it was very well-worded email and story, and we really appreciate you sharing, and we're so glad that you pushed through and that things are looking up now.
Yeah, we are. Okay, the next theme is fitting patterns makes me feel like my body is the problem.
We got the most feedback about this theme, and it's not surprising because that happens with ready to wear as well. You know, we try on clothes and you start thinking, you know, why is my body this way? Why is my body making this dress look weird? That's not the case. And I think logically we all know that, but it can still send us into a spiral, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So Laura has a great story to share. I'm going to start by saying I absolutely love your podcast. It's amazing to be able to listen to your guest interviews and sewing conversations while I work on my projects, especially your slow sewing episodes and your interview with Heather Liu, both of which have contributed to a massive shift in my viewpoints on my own sewing process in a positive way. Well, that's nice to hear. For me, what sticks out as a sewing struggle is the first fancy dress I made. I was so hyped up about it, buying what I thought was gorgeous fabric and obsessing over the perfect color thread to match. Little did I realize that 100% polyester would be 100% hell to work with and sweat city in the Sydney summer. Lesson learned. I made a toile of the bodice, and that was where the problem started. I had a feeling I would need an FBA, but the toile showed me I needed much more than that. The back shoulders were too tight, the waist too big, the bust line too small, inches of neckline gape. Long story short, it was a mess, and I had absolutely no idea how to deal with it past the full bust adjustment. My lack of fitting skills and knowledge meant that I put all the fitting issues down to problems with my body. Instantly, all the joy and empowerment I was getting out of making my own clothes was thrown into doubt. I began wondering why I should bother with making when I can get the same ill-fitting result in ready-to-wear for so much cheaper. It definitely also played a lot into the underlying self-consciousness I had about my bust line and my shape in general. I pushed on through and I wore the finished dress a couple of times, but those lingering feelings of self-doubt and body consciousness remained. It took a lot of reading, as well as this podcast, for me to realize that just because a certain block doesn't fit me, doesn't mean that my body is less than. I realized that drafting is just a set of proportions and choices made by the pattern cutter, sometimes to an industry benchmark and sometimes not, and that adjustment and fitting is all part of the sewing process. Terms like full bust adjustment and broad back adjustment can be so loaded with ideas of what we think full really means, when in reality, it's just a shorthand way of saying fuller bust than was drafted for adjustment. I'm by no means a fitting expert now, but I do find an enormous amount of satisfaction in getting the fit right, and I agonize less over the types of adjustments I need to make. I've also learned that there's just some pattern companies whose draft doesn't get on with my shape, and that's fine too. For me, the process has been less sewing makes you love yourself and more sewing makes you learn yourself. I don't always love my full butt or shoulders, but I've learned how to troubleshoot issues so I can love the way I look in the clothes that I make.
This is such a great story. Thank you, Laura, yes, for sharing. Thank you. Fit adjustments can lead to questions about our bodies and why we are fitting into that mold or aren't fitting into that mold. And that is totally okay and completely normal. Melissa Watson in her episode talked about how nobody's going to fit right out of the pattern envelope. And that is not the intention. It's important to realize that you are going to have to make adjustments to most patterns. And we really liked that suggestion that you gave, Laura, about finding a pattern company that fits with your body type or ruling out those companies that really don't work with your body. And that's okay to kind of hone in on those ones that really work for you.
Yeah, for sure. You have to experiment a little bit, try out different companies, see which ones really fit well with you, the silhouettes, the amount of ease, all of that plays into the different experience that you might have.
Yeah. And I really love this whole sewing makes you learn yourself concept.
Mm-hmm. Another episode in the future, perhaps.
The next story is from Denise. I'm a self-taught sewist and I started in the early 70s. I did not have the benefit of family or friends that sewed, so this has been a solitary journey for me. I was either fortunate or naive that every pattern I sewed only needed lengthening to fit well. Then came marriage, children, and many moves around the country, empty nesting, retirement, followed by our recent move to Washington. Through the years, my sewing was for school activities, drapes, upholstery, or gifts. Because my garment sewing ceased, my confidence waned, and my figure, well, age is not my friend. I've always had body image issues. I've taken one selfie in my life, 5 years ago, which I immediately deleted. I've completed 24 garments in the past 2 years, most of which I've disposed of. I don't like what I see in the mirror. I tried working with knits to my disappointment. I've tried following the various fitting techniques. No bueno. I was about ready to throw in the towel, but then I found your podcasts, which have been very encouraging. Also, I was fortunate enough to take a Palmer Pletsch tissue fitting workshop. This changed my previous understanding of fitting technique and reinvigorated me. I've since finished 3 garments. Only one is wearable. I'm still working out fitting. Fortunately, I'm not dependent on sewing for clothing. I still find sewing to be solitary. However, your podcasts have created a community. Thank you for addressing the many emotions of sewing. The one reason I think I have not given up on sewing is that I try to make it more about the journey than the destination. But who doesn't want a successfully finished product?
Oh, it's so true. We all want to embrace the process of it more. I think we hear that a lot from our listeners, but the finished product is still important. You know, we still want to be able to wear the clothes at the end of the journey, right? And I think that's okay. You can love both of those things.
Yeah. And it's so nice to hear that that tissue fitting workshop really worked out for you and gave you a new perspective. So listeners, check out episode 36 to learn more about that.
Yeah. Our next story is from Gudrun. I have a love-hate relationship with sewing. I wouldn't want to ever be without sewing, but I'm a horrible perfectionist who is low on time. I have a hard-to-fit shoulder-to-bust ratio, which is why I got into sewing. Ready-to-wear fits me terribly, and I wanted a blazer without having enough room in the bust area to fit an orange on top of each breast. I muslined pattern after pattern, hoping this time it would work, which it didn't. And this kind of fit issue is never mentioned anywhere. Small bust adjustment doesn't even begin to cover it. As a result, whenever I encounter a sewing problem, I tend to think, well, this won't work out and the fabric is ruined, or why can she make that and I can't, or why wasn't I granted boobs? 7 years later, I'm 3 months away from a dressmaking degree, and I still don't have a blazer. LOL. However, I am feeling almost confident enough to go for it.
That is awesome, Gudrun. I love that you took your frustration and channeled it into exploration and learning. And we're going to give you a little advanced congratulations on your degree.
Yeah, that's amazing. I was so happy to hear that at the end of the story that you just went for it and decided, you know what, I'm going to get that blazer, even if I have to get a degree to do it.
I hope you get your blazer. Our next story is from Victoria. You must have read my mind. I just made a dress yesterday, and by no one's fault of my own, I made something simple, super difficult. I almost abandoned sewing altogether. I have a very small bust size, but my waist and hips fall into a slightly bigger size. I just made the bigger size and not only had extra room in the bust, but the whole thing was too big. Long, long story short, I nipped and tucked for hours in all different places and ripped out and tried again. In the end, it turned out fine, but I had a moment of struggle. Sewing is supposed to make you love your body, and instead, I feel like I've become more self-conscious about my small chest because it's creating so many problems for fitting bodices. It's highlighting a problem that I wasn't really caring too much about before. I'm still learning, and when things fit, I love the way they make me feel. So in the end, I will push forward. And my butchered outfit came out pretty awesome anyways.
It's a great story of perseverance.
Yeah, it really is.
I think it's interesting too that sewing and adjustments tends to put labels on things and numbers on things, and it can draw attention to areas that we might not have even noticed before. And that kind of sucks, you know, like it's the benefit in the end is the better fitting clothes, but you have to go through that confrontation in order to get there. But I think like we're basically wizards with the power to make clothes that actually fit. We just have to go through like years of wizarding school first.
Sewing equals wizarding school. I'm into basically, this.
We're all in sewing Hogwarts together.
Oh my gosh. Can we make some t-shirts? Sewing wizard.
That'd be amazing.
Yes. All right. What's the female version of wizard?
A witch in the Harry Potter world anyway.
Oh.
Yeah, we could be sewing witches.
Sewing witches. All right.
I'm a stitch witch.
Stitch witch. Oh my gosh, I love it. Okay.
Next, we hear from Becky. When I first made the Emery dress by Christine Haynes, I made a muslin using old sheets. Something about the drape of the sheets made the muslin fit really badly. I had read all these reviews about how the Emery fit many people so well, and I couldn't understand what was wrong with me. I made about 4 muslins, and they never worked out. I would curl up on the floor and cry, feeling like I should never try fitting again. When I finally settled on a muslin that seemed right, the sewn bodice and the actual fabric didn't fit at all. I tried it again without the adjustments, and it fit just fine. I don't know what happened there, but I definitely over-adjusted, and the whole process tore my confidence apart.
Oh, Becky.
We got a really sweet reply from Melody, though, who said, I've had the same thing happen, spending days making muslins with fit adjustments only to find in the final fabric that they weren't necessary. I'm too afraid to skip the muslining process, but it often feels like a waste of time. I guess it's just helping me to learn or acclimate to the pattern, if nothing else.
Yeah, this is a really good point, Melody, because sewing a muslin is not only for fit, but it's also like a practice run for sewing the garment. So it's a good positive spin on this scenario. Mm-hmm. But we're really sorry that this happened to you, Becky. Muslin fabric can be deceiving. It doesn't have a lot of give, where garments fabric often do have some. So I would suggest trying to muslin a dress with a really similar fabric to the final garment. So not necessarily using the classic cream colored muslin fabric, but buying something maybe in the sales section that feels similar weight and drape wise and stretch wise so that you can get as accurate of a muslin as possible. It's a good way to shop your stash as well. If you have some fabrics that you're not in love with anymore, use them for muslins. But yeah, I think that's really tough.
It's happened to me before too, honestly. And sometimes you just don't know what happened. You know, it's like this sewing mystery. You're like, well, oh no, we'll never know.
Yeah, I think weight is a huge factor with fitting too. Like, especially when you're looking at pants, if you fit something in a lighter weight fabric, you're going to get wrinkles all over the place. You're going to see wrinkles everywhere and you're not going to know what they mean. And you're going to make all these adjustments to try to compensate for that. But then when you sew something up in a heavier fabric, those little wrinkles just don't show up. So it's important to pay attention to weight when you're picking a fabric for muslin.
Mm-hmm. And give yourself a little grace.
Yes. Our next story is from Allison. Fitting is the first thing that springs to mind. I've had no formal training and only started sewing a few years ago and sporadically. So I try to be kind, but it sucked my sojo right out the window and flung it under a bus. Because I seem to have lost all perspective on my body and size. But I'm taking a pants fitting class on Saturday. So instead of moping about feeling sorry for myself, I'm trying to do something positive about it.
Great outlook, Allison. I think taking a class is a wonderful way to learn more and get some outside perspective on some of your fitting issues and just embrace that experience with other people, and you're probably going to learn that everyone else has fitting issues too.
Can we just acknowledge, sucked my sojo right out the window and flung it under a bus.
I am into that.
Been there.
Our next theme is the comparison trap. Jenny says, I find sewing really rewarding when it goes right, but very disheartening when it goes wrong. I'm still learning new techniques and I get frustrated when things look sloppy. I make silly mistakes or I have followed the pattern and even made adjustments and it's miles away from fitting. I'm a very slow sewer and when things aren't wearable, I wonder why I bother at all. I think part of my frustration comes from social media. I love getting ideas from Instagram and the community is very supportive, but I can't help comparing myself to others. When people who have been sewing the same amount of time as me are producing amazing garments that are way beyond my abilities, it makes me feel like I'm not good at sewing at all. In a recent Instagram challenge, I struggled to get one simple top done by the closing date, and other people were submitting 4 or 5 garments, which were complex, and it left me feeling inadequate with my puny make. I know I shouldn't compare myself to others, but I get so excited by all the fantastic ideas and patterns and get really cross with myself when I don't have the ability to do them.
This is so hard.
I know. The community is such a wonderful place, but it can leave us feeling less than others. And social media in general, I think, has that effect. And it's kind of a nasty side effect of social media because people are sharing this like glossy version of their lives, right? They're posting their best selves on there and they're sharing their best moments and their highlights. And it's a great place to do that, but it can leave us thinking that that is everything. That's their entire life. It's just easy peasy all the time, wonderful sewing success, you know? And that's probably not the case.
Yeah, we've said this before, but it's important to keep in mind that social media is just a highlight reel and you don't know, you know, these people that you're comparing yourself to, they might have a ton more free time than you. They might be just really fast at sewing. They might not be paying as much attention to the details as you do. So you just have to go at your own pace and really accept and embrace that slow sewing. If you are slower at sewing, it's totally okay.
Absolutely. And that brings us to our next story as well.
This one's from Bronwyn. Speed bothers me because I'm constantly seeing other people's makes. If I have half an hour, I might have enough time to pin and sew a single seam. Maybe. I honestly get tired halfway through a waist seam because it can take 10 to 15 minutes to sew. My machine goes faster, but I don't. So places like Instagram can be intimidating.
Yeah, I mean, again, go slow, girl. You know, embrace the speed that you like to sew at and sew at the speed that is enjoyable and fun for you. You know, there's no point in rushing or going slower if that doesn't jive with you.
Yeah.
Our next comment is from Angel. Something that makes me sad is when my other half critiques some of my me-made clothes to the point of discouraging me. My mistake is I ask for his opinion because I do value what he says, but sometimes his honesty is too harsh. I might just be too sensitive. Oh, Angel, we don't think that you are too sensitive. The question is, I think, do you want his critique or do you want his encouragement? You know, like with Sam, I try to reserve critique until it's explicitly asked for. And, you know, if he's showing me something that he has painted, I like to compliment and encourage and take a really good look at it and see the parts that I think are done really well and tell him that, you know, and things that I think are cool and make sure that he knows that I see them. And there's no reason for me to critique his work unless he asks me to. And often when we go to our loved ones or the community, we're looking for accolades and gold stars and encouragement. You know, we're not really looking for critiques and he might just not know that, right? So like having a conversation with your significant other about the kind of feedback that you're looking for in those moments can be a game changer.
Yeah, I've definitely been there where I've had to have a conversation with my partner and be like, when I talk to you about this specific thing or when I ask you to be there for me or to give me some feedback or whatever, it's not necessarily asking for, you know, negative feedback. Sometimes I just need that support in my life and that, you know, another person to show what I've been working on or whatever. So it is important to have those conversations once in a while.
Yeah.
All right. Our next theme that we found is that sewing is hard.
Sewing is hard.
Sewing is hard.
We don't talk about that enough. Make it sound so easy.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
Our next comment is from Elsina. I love that there's so much help available in terms of sew-alongs and tutorials, but oh man, do I feel like an idiot if I still can't figure things out. When I made an Archer shirt a couple of years ago, I had the pattern booklet, the sew-along instructions, and a video tutorial, but when it came to the collar, I just could not do it. There was so much swearing and frustration, and the video started by saying that it looks complicated, but it's not. I was raging. I ended up sewing the collar stand 4 or 5 times and poked a massive hole through the seam, the fabric frayed with no hope of saving it. I felt so stupid and annoyed with myself. Since then, I've learned a different collar method that's way easier, and shirts are one of my favorite things to make, but it took a couple of years for me to recover and then try them again.
Oh, a little timeout.
Yes.
Yeah, that happens. And I think this is a great story to highlight that there's different methods in sewing for different types of construction, for different garments, different techniques. And some of them are going to work well for some people and some of them not so much, right? And you get to choose which methods work the best for you.
Yeah, what comes to mind for me is like flies, plackets, zippers,
yokes.
Collars, collar stands, all of those things, there are multiple ways that you can do them. So if one particular technique isn't working, then you might want to just turn to Google and see if there are some other ways that you can approach this technique or this particular process, and it might help you to overcome the challenge.
I also think sometimes, I know for me, if I'm in the midst of one of those super frustrating sewing moments, it's often because I need to have a snack or need to go to sleep, you know, need to put it down and return to it later or tomorrow. That always helps, right? If you are having one of those really frustrating moments, it's time to walk away.
Time to walk away. Give it a timeout.
So Melissa says, I'm ripping out the side of a sweater for the second time because I keep being unable to match the bottom seam on the front and back pieces. I think I know why. Too much pinning and not enough easing, but it's just frustrating. It feels like I'm ripping out seams 90% of my sewing time.
That is really frustrating.
It's super frustrating. The seam ripper should not be that involved in your sewing project. Fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. But it can happen. And I like to do a little pre-sewing before I sew these seams where things really need to line up, like the waist seam on a zipper or a side seam with a shirt sleeve seam, that kind of thing. You just hand baste it. Just get out your needle and your thimble and your thread and just sew a few stitches in that one area where you know it needs to line up perfectly. And then you can sew the seam on your machine. And when you get to that spot, it's already done. You know, that is such a game changer.
Yeah, it really is. One idea that I have or thought that I have on this is that sometimes things don't necessarily need to line up perfectly.
Whoa.
No, let's talk about this for a second. Because if you're sewing a side seam and for whatever reason at the bottom, you're left with one side that's a little bit longer than the other, this could be a cutting error. This could be the fabric shifting or growing a little bit as you're handling it. And no one will know if you just trim off a little from the bottom. I mean, I think we've all been there.
From the bottom, yes. If it's in the middle of your project.
Yes, if it's in the middle of your project. But I'm just saying that sometimes a little bit of trimming can solve a problem.
Well, definitely if you are going to do more harm than good to the fabric. You know, we talked to Brooksanne a lot about overhandling and causing the fabric to stretch out and shift and stuff. So if you're going to overhandle it through the process of seam ripping it out, you might as well just cut off the bottom. It's like the same thing.
Yeah, totally. All right. We have some sewing disasters to share.
These were great stories. I feel like we could do a whole sewing disaster episode.
I would love to do that, actually. Okay. Our first one is from Denise. I recently made my mother of the bride dress and had a very low point about a week before the wedding. I was using lace I bought in Italy, which was the most expensive piece of fabric I have ever purchased. With the dress mostly put together, it looked heavy and frumpy, and I hated it. I was to the point of thinking I would need to wear something I already had, but went on Pinterest for inspiration. I noticed that a lot of the dresses with lace were not solidly covered in it. Scattered parts of the fabric underneath was exposed. I started cutting parts of the lace away and it was transformed. It was a little scary and required a lot of hand stitching the lace to the silk underneath, and I didn't get much sleep, but I was pretty happy with the results.
This is such a great story of turning a project around, and very, very brave of you, because I can only imagine how scary that must have been.
Oh my gosh, Denise. I mean, I love that you just went for it and cut that lace. I'm sure it was really scary, especially since it was the most expensive fabric you'd ever purchased. Mm-hmm. But I can see why you would do that, because the alternative is not wearing the dress at all. So at a certain point, what do you have to lose? You know?
Yeah.
She had a make it work moment.
Make it work. Our next story is from TJ. The worst sewing failure was last year when I sewed up the dress shirt pattern from Merchant and Mills. I had planned to take it on my first trip to Paris. I thought I was so meticulous. I even used some precious Liberty London fabric for the facing and linings and such. The dress turned out horribly. The fit was awful, and I looked like a cast-off from Little Orphan Annie. I cried my eyes out because of the waste of time and money. I spent over $100, not including the cost of the pattern, to make something so awful. It put me off sewing for a while.
Yeah, that's really tough. We've been there. It really hurts when the fabric that you're using is precious or expensive, and then the project doesn't work out.
Yeah, you keep seeing that price tag. I've had that happen too.
Yeah.
It sucks. I don't have a solution for this.
Yeah, repurposing the fabric if you can.
Oh, that's a good one.
Trying to use it for another garment, incorporating it into another garment so that you don't feel like you're just throwing it away. But sometimes there isn't a solution to this kind of situation, and it's just about being able to work through those struggles and move forward.
And getting rid of the garment in question can be part of that healing process.
Oh, yeah.
So like keeping it around, being like, I'm going to reuse this fabric, or I'm going to salvage this dress, when every time you look at it, you're just full of hatred. Probably it's best to just get rid of it.
Oh, yeah. All right. Our next one is from Shelley. I've been sewing since I was a very little girl. Everyone would ask me to sew for them. In college, I started doing bridesmaids and flower girl dresses. An entire wedding party I did gave me the wrong measurements to be cute and competitive with each other, i.e., yeah, girl, I'm 36, 24, 36. They didn't want me to measure them. Big mistake.
Red flag, red flag.
There was boning and corsets. The dresses were gorgeous, but they were all the wrong size. 2 days before the wedding, I was crying. The groom was a friend, and our friendship was never the same. All the joy went out of doing those gigs for me. I learned a lot, but I never did another full wedding again. I don't think I sewed anything major again for nearly 20 years. I'm just getting back into it the last 4 to 5 years now, and I'm so happy. Never give up. Don't let anything steal your joy.
Oh! I got goosebumps.
I mean, that's a really positive spin on a really terrible situation. And I mean, wow. I would be pretty mad if someone gave me the wrong measurements for a dress.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's ridiculous, but sorry that happened.
We're so glad you're back.
I know. Right? We are very glad you're back. And lesson learned, right? Always take the measurements yourself. I do that with my friends and family that I make stuff for too, because people who don't sew don't really know how to measure themselves.
Yeah.
They don't even have flexible measuring tapes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they're just making it up. So definitely take the measurements yourself.
Yes.
Our next story is from Blair. I experienced my first big sewing struggle this past year, and I'm honestly glad that you're talking about them. I decided to make a quilt for me and my fiance since we moved in together. I have never made a quilt, but I thought I could handle it. I started the project in August and I finished in May, and the project made me hate sewing. I hated sewing because I felt guilty. I was working on clothes instead of the quilt, and I hated rolling up the quilt to try and piece it together. And finally, the act of actually quilting it. My sojo was lost for months and I didn't know how to get it back. I'm still actually feeling some of it months later. The project was forced and sucked my sewing life right out of me. I didn't sew for months after I completed my quilt monster. Now I'm trying to move slowly back into clothes by picking out patterns and fabric I'm really excited about. I never thought that this kind of project would send me into a pit of sewing despair. Now that the monster is completed, I love it more than anything I've ever made. But I still feel the side effects of that quilt monster today. Thank you for bringing this up. It's awesome to know I'm not alone in this community, and you always make me feel welcome.
Oh,
thanks, thank you, Blair.
I think sometimes those projects can catch us off guard, hey? When you're really excited at the beginning and then you get into something and you're like, okay, this is a lot more work than I thought it was going to be, a lot more complicated. It's just not working out the way I thought it would. But kudos to you, Blair, for sticking to it and following through and finishing this project. And it sounds like that was a good call, because it's one of your favorite things that you've ever made.
Yeah, sometimes those memories of the struggles in our lives or the tough things that we've gone through stick with us as some of the best memories. It's interesting how that can happen. And I think that those guilt-laden projects, like when you're in them, they're the worst.
Yeah, I'm hoping time will heal your wounds, Blair. And over time, you'll slowly forget about all the struggles with this quilt monster and only remember the fact that you have a beautiful quilt that you're going to keep, honestly, probably forever.
Forever, so, yeah.
Good for you.
Our next theme is that there's not enough time. And our past guest, Kaz Adams, had something to say about this. For my part, my struggle is time versus the sewing list. I have high expectations of how much I want to make, but I don't have the time. Therefore, I don't feel like even starting. It's the overwhelm of the sewing to-do list. I've just started to bulk cut out projects, and that has really helped. But I need to learn how to cut my to-sew list into bite-sized, achievable chunks. Time and expectations are what is stopping me from sewing.
Well, Kaz, I'm really happy to say that we just did a whole episode about this, mm-hmm. about planning projects. So I hope that you will listen to that and garner some tips from it. But I can definitely relate to this struggle. I think time is one of my biggest struggles with sewing. And it's really tough when you feel like you just don't have enough time, or you can't find the time, or when you do have the time, you don't feel like sewing. And then you end up kind of spiraling, or at least I end up spiraling into this sort of guilt-laden thoughts about how I don't bring any value to the sewing community because I'm not sharing my new projects, or I'm not sewing enough to be able to share projects all the time. So that can be really tough. But I think it's important to remember that even if you're just sewing one garment a month or one garment every 6 months, that doesn't make you any less of a sewer. That doesn't make you, you know, any less valuable to the sewing community. I think that we all sew at different rates. We all have different situations, you know, different amounts of time to focus on sewing, and that is okay.
Yeah, I really enjoyed going through in our project planning episode all of our techniques and all of our tips for how you can break things into chunks, like Kaz said, and batch things and plan things. But in the end, you know, it's fine if you just go at your own pace, and it's fine if you don't want to have a plan, and it's fine, like you said, to sew little or so a lot, you're still a valued member of this community.
Absolutely. And I think one of the most important things we talked about in this episode is just being realistic with your sewing list. You know, Kaz is talking about struggling with time versus the sewing list. So maybe, you know, reevaluating that list so that you're not setting yourself up for disappointment is a good way to just make sewing a more positive experience for you.
Great point.
All right. Am I being vain?
Are you being vain?
Are we being vain? This is another theme that came up that I thought was pretty fascinating, and we have some really great comments to share.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one's from Amanda. I secretly feel like I'm a bit addicted to sewing, buying fabrics, planning projects, keeping lists of lists. I sometimes lose perspective in my little insular sewing world. It's just clothes, and wonder if sewing is an extension of my materialistic impulses. Sometimes I'd like to care a little less about how I'm dressed and how I look. Perhaps it's a bit of vanity?
We got some replies to Amanda's comment. This one's from Beck. This is exactly how I feel sometimes about my relationship with sewing. I start to question whether this is a creative outlet, which serves an important purpose in my life, or just a cop-out for trying to legitimize my materialistic and vain impulse to have all the pretty things.
Lisa also replied and said, same here. I just got back in sewing after 25 years, haven't made one stitch, and I've ordered so much patterns and materials and a new sewing machine. So excited to do projects, but I went overboard with purchases.
Oh my gosh. These are all great points and a really interesting perspective. We talked a little bit in our recent episode about planning, and we recommended not overbuying for projects because that can send you into that place of like, what am I doing? I'm not even making these things. I'm just purchasing and wanting all the pretty beautiful things that are out there. And we also recommended, you know, trying to find that good balance in your closet and looking at your style and your lifestyle.
Yeah, we don't think sewing is inherently vain. It is an incredible skill and it's an awesome creative outlet. You may want to try working with more challenging fabrics or tackling more unique garments to extend your love of sewing into the world of couture craft and even sewing as art.
Yeah, I think sewing can be art.
I think so too.
I think sewing is art.
Yeah. Maybe pick up some cool techniques like sashiko embroidery or visible mending. Mm-hmm. Just slowing down and taking more time and care in your projects might make you feel less like you're in that sort of fast fashion cycle, but the sewing version of it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we have a great episode coming out in October that I'm so excited about with someone who focuses all on slow sewing, slow fashion, and all of that stuff. So we're excited to chat with her, and hopefully that will give you some inspiration as well.
Yeah. All right. Our next theme is my machine hates me.
My machine hates me. So Nikki says, I had a serger setback and I'm still ignoring this problem. When I first bought my serger, I was over the moon, but after a while, my serger stopped working properly. I rethreaded it, I cleaned it, I took it to my sewing teacher, but she couldn't make it work. And now it's in a corner and I am ignoring it. I have to take it to the service place, but I'm afraid it will cost a lot of money, which I don't have, so my seams aren't as neatly finished as they once were. It makes me feel ashamed to acknowledge I'm dodging this probably fixable problem. I don't know if you were looking for this kind of problem, but it bothers me that I am still not fixing this.
Yeah, we feel you on this one. Mm-hmm. Searchers can be scary, and when they mess up, it's really hard to figure out what is going wrong, and it can be so frustrating.
Yeah, and I think it's tempting to put off that machine maintenance, right? I've been there. I need to get my machines done now, and I've been putting it off because it means not having a machine for a little bit, and it means dropping a bunch of money on something that you can't necessarily see the results of, but I think you'll feel them when you're sewing.
Yeah. Sam gave you machine maintenance for Christmas. Wasn't that last year?
It was. And we still haven't gone and gotten it done.
Don't put off machine maintenance, Helen.
It was such a good present. Like, I think anyone out there could recommend that to their significant other or family members for a good gift, or just saving up for it. You know you're going to have to do it one day. So putting away $10 a month so that every year you can go and have your machine maintenance.
Yeah.
Great plan.
Yeah.
Machine maintenance fund. So our next theme is that health problems are getting in the way.
Our next comment is from Trotty. Sewing has been a lifelong passion. I'm currently experiencing vision issues that are impacting my passion, and I'm looking for aids and ways that I can overcome these low vision issues. I want to continue this creativity. If anyone else has experienced low vision issues, I would love your suggestions and feedback. And we got a great reply from Reggie. So Reggie says, as I've aged and moved into glasses, I found it frustrating at times with my sewing. We love black in my family of four adult daughters, and I find it very difficult unless on a sunny day. I've overcome needle threading by storing a small white card in the machine accessory box. I hold it behind the needle as I thread, and it's amazing. In terms of hand sewing, my mom used to have a magnifying glass that hung on a frame around her neck so she could do her embroidery underneath. Also, a lamp over the machine is great.
Those are great tips, Reggie. And we also wanted to point out that we interviewed Tanya Hughes, who shared her story about living with an eye disease. So you might want to listen to her episode for more inspiration as well.
Keep at it. Try out those tips. And if any of our listeners have any other tips for you, write us in and we'll share them on a future episode.
Yes, for sure. Our next story is from Claudia. I thought I would share the story from my final year at university with you. My final project had been canceled, and so at short notice, I was put onto a different project, meaning I had only 3 weeks to draft, fit, alter, and make a New York Police Department jacket and a pair of black trousers. Everything went wrong with this project. I felt like I was cursed. The fabric shop ran out of the fabric I needed and substituted it for something that turned out to be all wrong. I mixed up my side seams and my shoulder seams. I put my sleeves in the wrong armholes, and I zipped up my jacket to find that my pockets were wonky, so I had to completely deconstruct the jacket in order to move them. I came to making my jetted trouser pockets, and the stress of the project had resulted in a flare-up of the fibromyalgia I suffer in my hands. I was in agony and was struggling to even pick up pins and wasn't strong enough to push them through the fabric. I just broke down and cried right there in the workroom. I felt like this was a sign that I wasn't meant to be a seamstress. Previously, my disability had never stopped me sewing, and all of a sudden, I was completely debilitated by sewing. I could no longer hold a toothbrush or a pen because of the pain, and I felt like I would never be able to sew again. By some miracle, I made it through that project, but only because I was beyond caring and I just chucked everything together. As it happened, my tutor was amazed by my perseverance, but I will never forget the absolute despair I felt at this thing I loved suddenly bringing me so much misery. I love listening to your show, and it has inspired me to make clothes for myself for the first time after many years as a professional seamstress.
Thank you so much for sharing this story. I just want to say that you inspire me, Claudia, with your perseverance. And I I mean, we're really glad to hear that you made it through this project. And by the sounds of it, you turned it into a professional career as a seamstress. So good for you for keeping at it and not listening to those weird signs coming at you that you aren't meant to be a seamstress, because clearly you are.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes everything goes wrong that can with projects, and we have those disasters. And then you put on top of it this added struggle of your fibromyalgia. It sounds so challenging. And we really appreciate you sharing that story with us, because I'm sure that there are people out there who can relate.
Thank you again. Our next comment is from a textile enthusiast. My struggles are maybe a bit different, as they're linked to disability. I have a chronic illness which makes me very tired very quickly. The very act of sewing is a struggle, especially tracing and cutting patterns. I usually have to limit myself to patterns with fewer pieces and less chance of fit issues, because I know I can't deal with those most of the time. I do aim for a more ambitious project once every year, but I know it'll take months to become a reality. Thankfully, sewing brings me so much more than these daily struggles, so it's all worth it.
We're so happy that you still find that it's worth it. And once again, we want to say that the pace of your sewing practice is totally up to you and up to your abilities and up to what you like as far as a pace. So it's all good. Slow is good.
Slow is good. All right, let's talk about some lessons learned.
Yeah, this is our last theme. We want to end on some lessons learned and some takeaways for you guys.
Yeah, we do.
So Krista says, the last 5 things I made for me have not gone well, so my timeout pile has been quite large. I gave them all about 6 weeks in the pile and felt very discouraged. But as I take the items out and fix them, I've learned a few valuable lessons. Number one, I have renewed my commitment to myself to make a muslin first and correct fit issues before chopping into my hideously expensive, fancy, or otherwise treasured fashion fabric. Number two, sometimes a little time out, adding a waist tie or cropping a hem is all that's needed, and maybe some time in a dye vat. Number three, prints are really not my jam, unless they are very large scale or abstract. I've discovered that prints that I like the look of on the bolt, I often don't feel good in once I sew them up, and I'm learning to leave them at the store for someone else to enjoy. And number four, failure is part of the process of learning. Viewing mistakes and disappointment as an opportunity to learn has been a key takeaway for me this summer.
Amazing list, Krista.
Yes.
Thank you.
So good. I like number three about leaving those prints at the store. I'm learning that too, slowly.
Are you?
Very slowly.
Our next comment is from Christy. Krista and Christy.
Krista and Christy.
On Saturday, I serged a neckband to the wrong side of the shirt. I didn't want to cut it out to make the opening bigger, so I walked away. The old me would have immediately started negative self-talk and given up on all sewing. Instead, I kept repeating that I'm learning, and I thought about all the positive things I learned from the experience. I sewed the bottom band on as well as the cuffs, tried it on to make sure the fit was good, and made all of the mental notes I needed to make sure the next one is a success.
It's such a good tip. You are learning when you're sewing, right? Just repeating that to yourself when mistakes happen. You are learning.
Yes.
You are learning.
You are learning.
You are learning.
You're learning.
Our next story is from Monica. I've had my share of frustrations and setbacks as I've learned to sew over the past few years, but as a lifelong artist, I feel like I'm at an advantage. I don't expect to be good at it right out of the gate. Here's what I've learned from a lifetime of painting. Learning a craft is hard. It takes hundreds of hours to learn hand skills, to train your eye, to understand the materials you're working with, and bring it all together successfully. To be good at any craft takes an enormous amount of patience. I give myself permission to fail over and over again. I expect to fail, especially when I'm learning new techniques, and fitting is a constant struggle. I incrementally improve. When I look back, I can see my progress. I share my work with others for the joy of it, and it's never a competition. Because at the end of the day, the satisfaction of making something successfully is thrilling. It's also really hard. Creative work isn't easy, but it's always worth it.
I love this outlook.
Me too. So well written. It's so, yeah, just amazing. Thank you so much, Monica. This is the perfect summation of all of the kind of feedback we've been trying to give throughout this episode, is that it's okay to fail. It's okay to be in that struggle. You're not going to get it right the first time. All of those things, you know, it's really hard to really live that Outlook, and it sounds like you are at that place.
Yeah, you might not even get it right the second time or the third time or the fourth time.
I know.
And that's okay. Yeah, we use the comparison to painting frequently because it's such a good one. You wouldn't stop painting because you don't need more paintings, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't paint something and expect to nail it the first time.
No, I think I love the comparison because we don't think of our sewing as an artistic endeavor necessarily. It has that craft or it has that practical application as being clothing, but it can be directly compared to other art forms. And when you do make that comparison, you start to see these differences in the outlook and the way that we're thinking about sewing.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Monica.
Thank you. Our final story, comment, thought is from Tandy. I really want to have a little cry when I read all of these stories. I just want to rush in and tell everyone that they are beautiful and capable and perfect. Does my sewing sometimes frustrate me? Yes. Does it make me swear and sulk? Yes. Does it make me feel bad about myself? As a sufferer of chronic anxiety and depression, everything makes me feel bad about myself, except my sewing. My partner and I are constantly trying to figure out how to apply the resilience and fearless attitude I have towards my sewing to the rest of my life. I'm not necessarily very good at sewing, but it makes me brave. When everything in your life makes you want to hide under the bed with your eyes closed, a little bravery goes a long way.
Well said, Tandy. Thank you so much for sharing that. And we want to rush out and hug all of you too. And if you want to read some of the comments and the stories, it's in our Instagram post. We'll link it in the show notes as well, so you can go through and read everyone's comments. We didn't get a chance to share everyone's thoughts, but there's some really great stories in there.
Yeah, there really were. We just want to say a wholehearted thank you for sharing your stories with us. And we hope that by passing them along in this episode, we've helped you all feel a little bit more brave.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Helen, at helenscloset.ca and Caroline at blackbirdfabrics.com.
We're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
And if you're loving the show and you want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. And there are 6 bonus episodes in there now.
What?
Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Our show is produced by Sam Humphrey.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We're here for you. We can all hold hands and cry. It's going to be great.
I want a sewing meetup where all you do is hold hands and cry.
Just share your struggles and be like,
my needle broke.